Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Okay, please turn off your mobile phones. Okay, what do we have here? Let's go back. And, we have... Lakshakrama Vyanga. We're dealing with a sequence of dwanis. One dwani creating more dwanis. And in that case, it's a question of whether the sequence of suggestions is traceable or not. In the case of the final product of suggestion being rasa or bhava, it's not traceable. It's too complex and too fast. But if we're just suggesting simple things like vastu and alankars, then we can trace it. Then we make a division into whether the, the final dwani is based on, whether the first dwani is based on literal meaning or on figurative meaning. On Abhida or Lakshana. Right? Then we were also dividing into Shabda Shakti Bhu, Arta Shakti Bhu, and Obaya Shakti Bhu, founded on that the suggestion depends on the actual word being used, or just the meaning independent of the word, or a combination of both. In the case when it's shabdabu, when the suggestion is dependent on, the final suggestion is dependent on the particular words involved, then we have a simple division into just two kinds, which are, what the final suggestion is the result of the final suggestion is either a vastu or an alankar. Either it's an idea or it's a figure of speech that's suggested. And we saw examples of both, right? So we move on. Now what if the suggestion is founded on not the particular word, but just the meaning of the words. And the words could actually be shifted. You could substitute other words and still get the same idea, the same suggestion. That is Artha Shakti Bhu Dwani. There you have not only two divisions, you have more. Okay, tell me that again.
There was the 12 divisions.
Which 12? Tell me the divisions.
Well, the first subdivision of the tree is Alaksya Kama Mubani. The first tree is Sabdamula, Artamula, Ubayamula.
Right. Now we've dealt with further division of the Shabda Shakti Mula. That divides furthermore into two. Yeah. Now we're going to look at the Artha Shakti Mula. That will divide into more than two. Which? I'm on the 15th section, yes. In fact, here we are. We start with a Karaka. The author's Karaka. Artha Shakti Udbavo Tarstu Vyanjakak Swayam Udbavi Kavek Praudakti Nishpanno vaktus tat kalpitasya cha. So the vyanjaka arita, the idea that does the suggesting. Suggestion is made by a previous meaning, either by the literal meaning or the figurative meaning or another suggested meaning. You know, suggestion can be based on literal meaning, on figurative meaning, or on a previous suggestion. It's always based on some meaning of one kind or another. That meaning can be of three kinds. Swayam udbavi, rather than suggestion, can be of three kinds. It can the meaning that's suggested. Why did you say vyanjaka, not vyanjaya? Okay. The suggestion is made by the natural use of the words, swayam udbhavi. The idea, the suggested idea arises on its own strength. Or, kavek praudokti nishpano. It's derived from the praudokti. Let's just take that peculiar use of language by the author, by the poet. That means the poet is stretching beyond the normal use of the language. He's making unusual use of the words, the way they're not used in ordinary speech. That's a second way. And the third way is that the author has one of his characters speaking and the character does the stretching. We blame the abnormal use of the word, of the language, on the character who's speaking on behalf of the author. So it's either the words are functioning in their normal way, but they're managing to suggest something, or the author is using the words in an unusual way. It's his peculiar use of the language, or it's the peculiar use of the language on the part of the character created by the author, by the poet. Oh, tatkalpitasya. The person who's been created by the kavi. Now this is all subdivisions of arta shaktibhu vyanjana. These three subdivisions don't come into play for shabda shaktibhu, only arta shaktibhu. Because here we're talking about the playing around with the meaning of the words. If we were dependent on particular words, we wouldn't have this liberty to do this playing. So we don't divide into these three categories. We don't care about these three categories when we're dealing with shabda shaktibhu. But arta shaktibhu vyanjana can be divided into these three kinds. The funny meaning can be just by the natural way the words are ambiguous, or by a special twisting of the abnormal usage of the words by the author or by his character. In other words, it's not only the poet who may use the words in a peculiar way. This peculiarity of the words exists in the normal use of the language, in the regular vernacular. The way ordinary people speak, these ambiguities may be present in the words even there. Then it's swayam udbhavi. On the other two kinds, that which is generated by the peculiar use by the author or by the character created by the author. In those two cases, such use of the words is not found in ordinary language, in the vernacular. Then you can further divide. Yes? Where do you see Tandibadu? Oh, yeah, well, that's the explanation of, yeah. Tandibada, yeah. No, Tandibada, but it's Tandibada Vaktri, a speaker who has been put into place, who has been included in the composition.
The
Yeah, a speaker who has been introduced into the story by the poet. The poet has created a character who's speaking. That's what we're talking about. Well, there's a poet speaking in his own out of his own mouth. It's one thing, but if he creates a character who does the speaking, it's another thing. Well, how does it make any difference? Yeah, it doesn't really matter. We're just being poetic. Poets like to make the distinction. It doesn't make that much difference. Yeah. It's the poet anyway. Well, the thing is, you got to let the poet be a creator. The poet is like Lord Brahma. He creates his own universe. So in that universe, it does matter. You know, we don't say, oh, it's all one, it's all the poet. But there's the poet and his creatures, and the creatures assume an autonomous existence. They do things that the author would never dare do. You know, his characters can do all sorts of outlandish things that the author would be embarrassed to do himself. So but they are different. Yeah. Well, is this, yes, I'm sorry. You can say, according to Tattva Vichara, the author and his characters are non-different. It's just the author speaking. But on that level of bhava, which is what poetry deals with, on the level of moods and ecstasies, the characters assume autonomous existence. They're speaking, they live a life of their own. And authors experience this. They create characters and the characters just take on their own lives and they have no control over them. Yes? Yes.
And then he pauses for some time, stop dancing, and then through the other understanding of his mood, sings a song.
Yes.
And then that song is quoted. And then well, it creates a certain mood that, okay, it's not the author speaking, it's Swarup Damodaran Swami speaking. And what you have, it creates a certain mood in that song, conveys a certain meaning, just Radharani speaking, but it's actually
Yeah.
It's like a certain mood, like
yes, the mood is affected by even just you repeat someone else's statement. You repeating it adds changes it, modifies it just by your repeating it. Especially since that verse about being on the bank of the Reva, you know, it's not originally written. It wasn't written by a Vaishnava author. It's not originally about Radha and Krishna. It's about some mundane couple. And the Reva River is not the Yamuna. But Lord Chaitanya and his devotees, you know, in their transcendental vision, they saw it as the Yamuna. It's called Vyaja. You take mundane poetry and you read a spiritual interpretation into it. That's your imagination, but it becomes transformed. Where's the overlapping?
Overlapping of the categories of bodies themselves.
The what?
The categories of bodies themselves, and then the people who produce them.
Yeah, but this division of who did the speaking, you know, where does the dwani come from? Is it inherent in the ordinary use of the language, or is it peculiar twisting of the language by the author or by his character? That doesn't apply to all the different varieties of dwanis, only to the Artha Shaktibhu, anyway.
Is if words spoken by the person through his character are any different of the dwani than the words spoken?
There must be some difference. It's not, you know, maybe not measurable, you know, with an oscilloscope, but there's something there. Why did he make it? I don't know. I can't answer you. Why he makes the distinction? What's the significance of it? Maybe when we look at the examples, we'll see something.
Just like we were saying, there's rice or three more rice. Brown rice, red rice, and
there's rice. Tuesday rice and Wednesday rice.
And rice is like from Dallas.
Yeah.
The classification is not like, it's
Okay, well, you could doubt the classification. It serves no purpose. But let's see. Let's look at the examples and see if we can discern anything that justifies making the distinction. I just, the author, Covey Carnivore is not the one who made this up. He's adapting this theory from previous authorities. So this is traditional, standard, to make this division. It goes back hundreds of years. There must be something to it. I'm sorry, I'm not an expert. I'm not sure what it is. Let's see if we can find why. What justifies this distinction? What difference does it make if the author is speaking or the character created by the author is speaking? How does that affect the quality or the functioning of the dvani? I can see how it makes a difference if it's the way words are used by everyone anyway, and just taking advantage of that, or you create your own unusual use of the words. That makes a difference. Only that the author has his voice. Just like proper usage is to speak the way people speak. And so you have your idiodialect. But that's also fixed according to your personality. You don't speak out of character. You have a way you speak. And you could try to imitate someone else, but you could play act and talk like somebody else, but that's talking out of character. So to use the swayamudra means to use normal voice of average person. When the author is speaking, he uses his voice. And when the character speaks, he's got a different voice. The character has a different personality from the author and has a different voice. Yes? Well, is he he's a comedian, but is he a poet? Well, as a real poet, a poet is like Lord Brahma. He can create a universe and give life to characters, and they take on their own lives. Then he's a poet. Yes? Yes. Yeah, if Madhu Mangal says something, if Rupa Goswami said one thing, it creates a certain effect. But if Madhu Mangal in Rupa Goswami's place says the same exact words, it would create a different effect. Because of who Madhu Mangal is. He has a different character than Rupa Goswami. And so, given who the person speaking is, the significance of what he says can differ. So Madhu Mangal and the author Rupa Goswami are two different people, and what they can say the same exact same words can create a different effect. Yeah. I mean, Madhu Mangal can tell Krishna, if you don't give me a laddu, I'm going to smash you on the head. But Rupa Goswami would never say that. Yeah. And Rupa Goswami could say the same words. He couldn't imagine that he meant that he's going to smash Krishna on the head. Yeah, I think it's because the author and his characters have different personalities, and therefore the effect of what they say will differ because of that. Now, okay, now we subdivide. We have, this is for Artha Shakti Bhu, which is already a subdivision of a subdivision, I don't know how many times. Now we're further subdividing that into three, and now into another two. That was the same two that we had for the Shabda Artha Bhu. That is, what is suggested could be either a Vastu or an Alankar. Each of the three divided into two. It makes six. Those are the two divisions we had for the Shabda Shakti Bhu, and then we only had two. Now we have six so far for the Artha Shakti Bhu. And we'll introduce another two, and each of the six can be divided into these two. You have what is suggested. Remember, you have a chain of suggestions. So you have the second suggestion. The result of the second suggestion is either either Vastu or Alankar. Well, you can also say in this category, you can also say that the first suggestion that makes the second suggestion can be Vastu or Alankar. So you can have a Vastu generating an Alankar, a Vastu generating a Vastu, an Alankar generating an Alankar, an Alankar generating a Vastu. So you end up 3 times 2 times 2 is 12. We don't do that for the Shabda Artha Bhu, but for the Artha Shabda Bhu, don't ask me why, it divides up into 12. We consider when it doesn't matter exactly what the word is, when we're dealing with the abstract meaning apart from the word, when you can substitute other words and still get the same dwani, then we have 12 different varieties. No, but you didn't catch me on the last step. Each of those six divides into two again. We have a chain of dwanis. This only applies, our author tells us, I didn't read the sentence in Sanskrit, but this analysis only applies when we're dealing with uttam ottam of kavya, where one dwani is suggesting further dwanis. If we only have one level of dwani, then we don't analyze it into these divisions. He says a different analysis has to be searched out, and he doesn't give it to us. Because he's not mostly interested in uttam ottam kavya anyway. A poetry that only does one level of dwani, he's not even bothering to analyze. But when we have a chain of dwanis, the first dwani, the result of the first dwani can be either vastu or alankar, and it produces a further dwani, which also can be vastu or alankar. Either one can generate either one. So you get 3 times 2 times 2 is 12. Unlimited. You can go on and on and on. It depends how expert a poet you are. You can create like a whole, waterfall of, going in all directions of all sorts of dwanis. That's what makes poetry amazing, when something like that happens. Especially when what's being suggested is ecstasies and rasa, then it's very relishable for those who can perceive it. That's what Kavi Karnapur is interested in presenting. He's not interested in mundane analysis of mundane poetry. Although he's using the same theory that was used by the mundane poets, but he's applying it to the transcendental poetry. And he makes sure that we understand it transcendentally by using his own examples, which are all about Radha and Krishna Lila. Okay, examples. We want examples of all 12 subdivisions of Artha Shakti Bhu. So in all these cases, it doesn't depend, the suggestion doesn't depend on the particular words being used, but on the meaning. If it depends on the particular means, then you don't have so many, you're restricted by the word, and therefore you don't have so many subdivisions. What you can do with it is limited by the particular meaning of the word. Do we see some examples, or we need more clarification before we proceed? Ready for examples? Okay, first one's in Prakrit. You have a question about Prakrit? If you want to be a connoisseur of poetry, you have to study Prakrit.
So those that were written in the
Well, you know, there's always people who go to plays just to show off and don't understand what's going on. But the connoisseurs, the people in the audience who actually know what's going on, they're supposed, they have to understand the language, yeah. And the women speak in Prakrit. The women and the jokers. Manu Mangal speaks Prakrit. Yeah? Which one? Yes, and in actual drama, poetry can be used in drama, and in drama there's also dance with mudras, also as part of drama. So an educated audience should be familiar with all these things. So you have to go to school and study Kavya Shastra even to become an educated member of the audience, even if you're not going to write any poetry. It's part of, you know, a cultured person's education. Traditionally, Vaishnav scholarship means you study grammar, and after that you choose to study either Kavya or Sahitya, literature, or Darshan, philosophy. Specialize. Okay. Gaala Mahinda Nandana Sunagore Etta Ma Pivisa Udja Sohi E Sangi Go Mi Duram Gao Gautam. Understand? In Sanskrit, Gokula Mahendra Nandana Shunya Grihe Tra Ma Pravisha Adya Sakya Swami Goman Duram Gato Goshtam. That's a Sanskrit reflection of that Prakrit. Oh, son of the great king of Gokula, Goula Mahinda Nondana Shunyagraheta Tra, here in this vacant house, Ma Pravisha, don't come inside. Sunok Gare Eta Ma Pavisa. Well, because Hindi comes from Prakrit. Adia, okay. Today, the husband, the swami of the gopi, Udja Sahiye Sami, Goman, the possessor of lots of cows, he's gone far away to the cow pasture. Go me duram go go tum. Okay, so. Darling son of the king of Gokula, don't enter this vacant house. Today, the husband of this girl, gopi, the possessor of many cows, has gone far away to the cowherd pasture. Okay. The vritti says, the word swami is used, but not the idea of priya. The idea of the master, not the idea of the beloved husband, the beloved. So suggesting that, okay, he's the husband, but she's not, she doesn't love him so much. Gomi bakwinam gavam pati. Well, he's the lord of lots of cows, many cows. Therefore, don't expect him to come back very soon. He's got a lot of cows to watch. Durum, and he's gone far away, not close by. So this house is going to remain vacant for some time, for some, you know, substantial time. These are being suggested. So here we have more than one vastu being suggested by the vastu. Vastu suggesting vastu. That we say that the husband, that actually three things. He's swami. That suggests he's not beloved, but he's just the Lord. He's got lots of cows. That suggests that he's, he's not going to come back very quickly. And he's gone far away. That suggests that the house is going to remain vacant for some substantial time. Three vastus, suggested by three vastus. But then there is anudvani, for further suggestion. Those suggested vastus suggest tenatra nikshankameva bhavisha vilasyatam. There's another vastu suggested. This is the second suggestion, second level of suggestion. You can feel free without any anxiety to come in the house and take your pleasure. Okay? So vastu suggesting vastu. This is, okay? This is the category. Yes?
So the first vastus are swami, not priya.
Yes. Well, the idea. It doesn't matter the actual word, but the idea. He's the Lord, not the beloved. He's gone far away, so he's not going to come back very quickly. He's got a lot of cows, so don't, you know, he'll be gone for some time. That's a compound suggestion of vastu by vastu. Right, but that's contradicted by the further suggestion is, don't worry, you can come here and do whatever you want because the place is free. So she says, don't enter. So there's actually, you can even say, you could say, it's not, the author's not saying it, so I don't want to take the liberty, but you could say there's also suggested the Vyativeka Alankar. They're saying one thing and meaning the opposite. Don't enter. But what's suggested is you can enter freely. But that's... But according to both... Kavi Karnapur and Vishwanath, the commentator, this is an example of vastu suggesting further vastu. A suggestion of vastu suggests a second suggestion of vastu. Is that okay? Okay. Next example in Sanskrit. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, I'll tell you. This is, where does he say? This is Svayamudbhavi. This is, you know, there's nothing, the words aren't being twisted here. This is all normal usage of the words. But the ideas, you know, are suggesting other ideas. There's no... an abnormal use of language here, so it's all Svayamudbhavi. Normal colloquial use of the words. Okay? The words themselves create these suggestions. But you could substitute other words, so therefore it's Artha Shaktibhu. You could find some synonym for Swami and express the same idea, Pati. You know, it wouldn't make a big difference. But if there was some play on double entendre of Swami, you know, that he's a sannyasi or something, Then you'd have to use the word Swami. It would be Shabda Shaktibhu. Okay, second example. Shruyate parimale mala shabdo me kaladi shu kalad yabi yoga chandadi rasa eva hi panko nivikesha rasanadi shubandaha. We hear within the word parimala. What does parimala mean? Fragrance. Good smell. It's parimala. But in parimala we hear the word mala. Garbage. And mekaladishu, kaladi, kaladyabi yoga. And in the word mekala, which means a belt, like the gopis are wearing, you know, their clothing with some belt, mekala. But the kala, cruel, is there within the word mekala and other components in mekala. And chandanadi rasa, well, all this paste made out of chandan and other ingredients, it's just mud, just dirt. And nivikesha rasanadishu, and when you're talking about, you know, bondage, or rather, when you're talking about the knots on the garments and on the hairs, This is bondage. Then, you know, in reference to the waistband and the hair, there is bandha, bondage. So, okay. In this case also, because the suggestions are made without any special endeavor to stretch the meaning of the words on the part of the kavi. Therefore, it's swayam udbavi. The normal usage of the words create these suggestions. What's being suggested? What's suggested, first of all, the first suggestion is a vastu, that in Vraja Loka, there is no garbage or any other contamination. See, what's being said here is ironic. In Vrindavan, the only time you hear the word mala is when someone says parimala. You know, there's no other reference, no other idea, mention of mala in Vrindavan. Nobody has to go to the toilet. Yeah, there's no mala chaga. The only mala you hear about in Vrindavan is parimala, fragrance. And the only word, only time you ever hear about kala is when you're talking about mekala, the gopis' belts. And chandanadi rasa, and the only mud you hear about is the paste of chandan. And the only bondage you hear about is tying the the waistband and tying the hair. So what is being implied? What is being suggested? That in Vrajaloka, there is no such contaminations. There are no such contaminations. That makes a second. That's Swayam Sambhavi. That the author doesn't have to use the words in any abnormal way to create that suggestion. Of course, there is Shlesha. When you see the word mala within the word parimala, that's a play on words, but it's there in the word. You don't have to twist the meaning of the word to do that. Now, there's a second suggested by the first. Tena sobhav okti alankara. By that idea that there's no contamination of any of these kinds in Vraja, we're suggesting an alankara called swabhav okti. Now, there are 68 different kinds of alankars, of actually artha alankars, and then there are shabda alankars also. We study them in chapter 7 and 8. I'll have to jump ahead and tell you what swabhav okti alankar is. It's simply what's called natural description of nature. Very often in poetry, there are passages that just describe in detail the beauty of nature. Like in the Bhavatam, description of the rainy season and the autumn. You know, it's poetic description, but it has philosophical elements in it of the beauty of the rainy season and then the Shravat season. There in the what chapters? In the 10th canto. Anyway, that is use of the alankara called swabhav okti. When you use the words in such a way to make a very beautiful, detailed, and very insightful description of natural beauty. That's called swabhavokti. So that swabhavokti is suggested by the idea that there, in this detailed way, that there's no mala or other contaminations in Vraja. What is suggested is the swabhavokti alankara. If a poet writes a long passage in his Mahakavya, 10 or 20 verses describing the beauty of, like we read in the chapter about Gajendra, at the beginning of the chapter, half of the chapter was just description of the Trikuta mountain and all the birds and animals, and that's extended swabhavokti. To do it effectively, you had to write a long passage describing all the details of the beauty of nature. But here, in one verse, it's being suggested, without writing 10 or 20 verses, there's a suggestion of swabhavokti, just by the first one, he's suggesting it. That's the second. Yeah, the first one is the idea that there's no contamination in Vajra. The second is the figurative, the poetic effect of a beautiful natural description. That's one of the alankars. This is Vastu suggesting alankar. So we have Vastu suggesting Vastu, now second Vastu suggesting alankar. But then there's a long, detailed description of all the beauties.
Yeah.
That is doing it explicitly. It takes a lot of poetry to do that, 10 or 20 verses. But you can do it quickly if you just make a suggestion of it. You can suggest the same alankar that normally would take a long passage to explicitly state. I'll give you one more example. Ganjanana hiv bibeshi gurunam kanjanakshi yamona arunaga anjanaba iha kunjara eka kanjanala dala banjanakari. You are not afraid of the roaring of your gurus, the chastisement of your parents. This is one gopi talking to another. You are not afraid of your parents howling at you. Kanjanakshi, young girl who has eyes like a kanjana bird, sparrow, or whatever. Yamunam Arunaga. Today you have gone to the Jamuna. So you're not afraid of what your parents yelling at you. Kanjana Akshi. You've gone to today to the shore of the Jamuna. Anjanaba. Iha Kunjara Eka. Over there, at the Jamuna, there is one elephant. Kunjara, who has eyes dark black, who's colored black like kajal, a big black elephant. Kanjanala Dala, the Banjanakari, he's breaking all the petals and the stems of the lotus flowers. Okay, so what is she saying that for? There's something hidden in this, something being suggested. You're not afraid of the yelling of your parents. You've gone to this Jamuna today where there's that big black elephant who's smashing all the lotus flowers. What does she mean by that? Now, here one sakhi is speaking to another. There is one sakhi speaking. Okay? So, Aruna, you went today. You've gone at an unusual time. Why'd you go today? This day's not the day for going swimming at the Jamuna. We do that on Friday. So why'd you go? You went today. You know what that suggests? You didn't go to take a bath. You went to be with Krishna. You went to associate with Krishna. Because this is not the time to go take bath at Jamuna. This is actually, according to Kavi Karnapur, what's being suggested here is an alankar called Kavyalinga. It's sort of make-believe logic created by the poet. where the poem pretends to be giving a logical argument. It really doesn't fit the rules of logic, but it's constructive logically as a sort of pseudo-logic. It's called Kavyalinga. Like, you went today, therefore, you didn't go to take a bath, you went to be with Krishna. Because today is not the normal day for going to take a bath. So there's a lot kind of logic there. It's Kavyalinga. It's sort of pseudo-logic, poetic pseudo-logic. Called Kavyalinga, that's an Alankar. Such use, when you put together such a pseudo-argument, poetic pseudo-argument, that's an Alankar, a figure of speech called Kavyalinga. That's being suggested by the words, by the idea that you went today. You could say that in different words. You don't have to say Aduna, you could say Adya. And you, instead of Aga, you could say Agachata, you went. Agachas, or Gatavanasi. The words don't matter, it's the idea that matters here. So it's Artha Shaktibhu. The words that are expressed, the idea that's literally expressed is making a suggestion of an Alankar. The Alankar being pseudo-poetic poetry, poetic logic, poetic pseudo-logic. Now, that makes a second suggestion. Let's see. Tena tvam gunanam rajanabeshi. Now, it said, additional factor here is that it's being literally said, you're not afraid of your parents' chastisement. You're not afraid of the roaring of the gurus, the guru ganjanam. That suggests avastu. Actually, it's the logic that you didn't go to take a bath, you went to be with Krishna. And that makes a second suggestion, that as we said, as I just said, you're not afraid of your parents' chastisement, but what you are afraid of is missing out on the association of Krishna. That is a vastu, suggested by the Alankar. We got the literal meaning of the words suggesting a vastu, an Alankar, and that Alankar is suggesting a vastu. So here's an example of Alankar suggesting vastu. But there's a second half of the verse. That's just the first half. In the second half, it says, it talks about an elephant. But what does it matter if it's an elephant? Is there really a big black elephant on the Jamuna? Is that really happening? You don't see elephants on the Jamuna too often. It's not, you know, native habitat for elephants, especially big black ones. No, she's hiding something here. She's really talking about Krishna. So this is apakhnova. This is refusing to disclose that she's really talking about Krishna. She's hiding the identity of Krishna. This is another Alankar called apakhnuti Alankar, where you hide the fact of what you're really talking about. You pretend to be talking about something else, and you just don't disclose what your real subject matter is. It's another figure of speech. So here we have the words that there's a big black elephant there that's breaking all the lotus flowers. That suggests the figure of speech that you're actually hiding the fact of that your real subject matter is Krishna. The Krishna is over there in the Jamuna. And what is he doing? Well, okay. Anyway, he's, taking advantage of all the gopis. So that's what's being figuratively referred to as this big black elephant smashing all the lotus flowers. Here we have the suggestion by the words The meaning of the word suggests the meaning. We could say gaja instead of kunja, it wouldn't make any difference. The actual words don't matter, but the meaning suggests the figure of speech that we're hiding the fact that we're really talking about Krishna. And that makes a further suggestion that there's some similarity between Krishna and an elephant. Krishna is like an elephant in various ways. That is called upama alankar, or metaphor. We don't say Krishna is an elephant, Krishna is like an elephant, but we're suggesting that comparison by talking about an elephant when we really are hiding the fact we're talking about Krishna. So that dissimulation, or apunuti, is suggesting another alankar of upama. Upama alankar is very common. Every metaphor is an example of upama alankar. Your face is the moon. And there are metaphors like that all over the place in poetry. But here we have a suggested use of upama, not an explicit one. It's being suggested that Krishna is an elephant, or is like an elephant. It's a what? Very sensual? Yeah, and elephant gets his way. Nobody can stop an elephant. Yeah, and he does cause damage. He steps on all the lotus flowers, and Krishna also ruins the lives of all the girls. You know, just like an elephant in a china shop. That's a bull. Anyway, that's an example in the second half of the verse of an alankar. Both half of the verses, no. First half of the verse, we have a vastu suggesting an alankar. Second half of the verse, we have an alankar suggesting an alankar. So now we have four examples. In three verses, we've covered four of the 12 types. No. Where? We haven't gotten to that yet. We got vastu suggesting vastu and alankar suggesting... Oh, okay, let me get this right. We had three examples so far. The first example was an example of vastu suggesting vastu. The second example, this example, the first half of the verse, we have a vastu suggesting an alankar. Yes, the second half, the first half of the verse, we had an alankar suggesting a vastu. The second half, we have an alankar suggesting another alankar. Okay. That covers four of the 12 subcategories in these three examples. Now there's going to be more examples to give you the other eight. There'll be examples of all of them, but some of the verses will combine more than one in the verse. But we have eight more subcategories to exemplify. Well, let me see what Vishnu says about that. Sundarinam adara rupam padma dala. He's breaking the padma, the lotus petals, which are the lips of the beautiful girls. He's breaking their lips. Okay. That's Vishwanath's explanation. I think that's all we can handle today. Hey, thank you, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.